RunDNA has an incredible range of running and walking footwear, apparel and accessories, catering for anyone who is looking for the right shoe and fit. They're trusted by podiatrists and physiotherapists right across Adelaide. The RunDNA fitter's advice is second to none. So if it's time for new walkers or runners, you can find RunDNA, 20 Manton Street, Hindmarsh, or the other location, 391 Fullerton Road at Fullerton. Both stores open 7 days a week, plenty of off-street parking. You can find them online as well, rundna.com.au. If you run or walk, then you need to RunDNA.
It's Thursday the 29th of May. Welcome to Hooked on Sport. And g'day, Ben.
Wallace, good afternoon. Great to be with you. Weather's turned, hasn't it?
It certainly has. Did you survive the storm on Monday?
Yeah, look, I did. But I've been enjoying the fact that all of the running, and we talk about my running a bit, has been done in beautiful warm weather. And it was actually Tuesday afternoon. We had to run in that cold, brisk wind. And running into it was absolutely, decidedly unpleasant. And I have to report yesterday, very, very minor, not too worried about it, but I did just strain a hamstring.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think I'll be out for a week or two. As they say in AFL parlance, hamstring awareness. But that's what happens at my age when you're trying to push yourself. So it was a lesson learned in real time.
Well, that's perfect. You can put your feet up Saturday night when the Crows and the Swans meet at the SCG. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, our mob taking each other on. I wouldn't have thought I would have said this for a long time, but the Crows turn up at the SCG as favourites, and I think they win pretty comfortably. Gee, Sydney have been disappointing, and it's more than just a bit of a blip. It is sort of, there are some consistent behaviours going on with that team that I really feel like they're in a lot of trouble this year. I mean, that's obvious, and I'm always conscious of the fact that things can change pretty quickly in AFL football, but if there's one club that I don't see a lot of upside right now, it is the Sydney Swans, and I expect Adelaide to have a pretty comfortable win against them this weekend. What are you thinking about your team, mate?
Yeah, I'm with you. Mill's got a match, one match, so he's out. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, to watch them, they're just not making completions of passes and things like that. It just doesn't look like the Swans of last year. I know they've got a lot of players out, but there's a big difference to where they were and how they were playing last year compared to the way they're playing this year.
Just one thing I noticed about the Adelaide Crows, and this is something that is unique in their history, because I mean, they have often had players come in from country zones, but the southeast has been traditionally an area where they haven't sourced a lot of players from. But they've got four players out of the southeast right now who are all really critical players for them. So Luke Pedler, a number one draft pick in 2021, who's just starting to find his feet as a midfielder at AFL level, and I really like the look of him. He's from Kingston. Jordan Dawson, the captain, is from Robe. Darcy Fogarty, who is the key man alongside Riley Thilthorpe up forward, is from Lucendale. And Mitch Hinge, who I reckon is one of the most important players at the Crows right now, playing as that attacking halfback, is the boy from Mundalla. And I actually had a quick look across the league this week, and I was inspired by it because Angus Clark, the boy from East Gambia, who had that incredible debut for Essendon in the Dreamtime match last weekend. But have a look at this. Lockie Newell's from Kybie Bolite. Lincoln McCarthy is from, he's not from Millicent. I should be able to work that out, Lincoln McCarthy, but he's up at the Brisbane Lions as well. Mason Redman, another Essendon player who is from Millicent. Angus Clark, as we were talking about, from East Gambia. And Toby Pinker, defender with North Melbourne, who's from Tantanoola. So the southeast right now, and it always has been, it's fascinating that against the backdrop that it's one of the areas that's undergoing quite significant change and restructuring at the moment. But what a significant area that is for Australian rules football and the AFL, when there are so many superstars out of that area going around the competition, in particular at the Adelaide Crows at the moment.
Okay, just had a thought during the week. We might just sort of mix things up a little bit. How about if I throw you some statements and you tell me whether it's fair or a farce? You up for it?
Love it. Let's go.
Number one, Adelaide WNBL franchise must be called Lightning.
Farce. Look, I understand the history of the Adelaide Lightning, but I would be perfectly comfortable if we came in with an entirely new franchise. So the sticking point at the moment is that Pellegra, the current owners of the Lightning name, are looking to get their fair lug of skin, if you like, to be able to justify handing over the license, and the government's going to be on the end of it. I mean, if I'm the government and I'm looking at a franchise that, yes, has some history, but barely attracts 500 people to a game for a National League competition every week, I'm probably thinking to myself, I can do something new here and create something out of nothing, and it can be pretty special. The Adelaide Crows were, as the Port Adelaide fans in particular like to say, were born out of a courtroom in late 1990. And I went to their first ever practice game at Football Park just 3 months later in February when they played Essendon, and there was 45,000 people there. So they don't be called Lightning. I think that would be in an ideal world. Yeah, that would be lovely. But right now I'd be very comfortable if we came up with an entirely new name. And Peligra, yes, thank you for what you've done, but you cannot hold that name to ransom. If you're prepared to hand it over, great. If not, let's all move on and let's come up with something really fresh. Agreed. What do you think?
Oh, 100% agree on that totally. Wasn't it the cricket teams changed their names to the Scorpions and they changed back, you mentioned a while back?
Yeah, so in the mid-90s, South Australia became the South Australian Redbacks and the women became the Scorpions maybe not long after. I haven't researched that, so I don't know. But at the beginning of the last summer, both teams were changed back to South Australia Men and South Australia Women. And I don't think we've lost – I don't think we gained much by Redbacks, and I don't think we lost anything by returning back to the original name. So, yeah, it's probably a good lesson for the Adelaide Lightning. You could call yourselves the – yeah, Adelaide, whatever you like.
Relaunch and move on.
Correct. Yep.
Number two, Alex Pearce deserved to get off.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm very comfortable with this. I watched this in motion, in slow motion. Look, you never want to see a player get injured, as Darcy Byrne-Jones did. But Alex Pearce did everything you would expect of an AFL footballer. He attacked the ball with his eyes on the ball, and the split second that he realised that there was someone in between him and that ball, he did everything he could to minimise the risk of injury. Yes, it was unfortunate that Darcy Byrne-Jones was concussed, but I would argue if Alex Pearce had have seen him and decided to brace himself for impact, then Darcy Byrne-Jones wouldn't have walked off that ground. He would have been going off on a stretcher. So, look, this is a 360-degree collision game where incidents like this are going to happen, particularly if someone like Darcy Byrne-Jones courageously is going to run with the flight of the ball. And I'm very, very comfortable with the idea that Alex Pearce doesn't deserve to be suspended for it.
Yeah, I agree. Number three, Dean Cox can't coach.
Farce. He can coach. He clearly can coach. He will be a very, very good coach going forward. But I have to say, Wallace, he does look like the kind of guy who 10 weeks in looks exasperated, looks like he's frustrated, looks like he's struggling to get through to the players. I would say right now I'm not convinced that he's going to be a long-term coach of the Sydney Swans Football Club. I feel like that this club is going to meander for a couple of years, and whether that's going to be on Dean or whether that's going to be the fact that, as we've seen with a number of clubs who've played in a losing grand final, they're going to need to reset their list and he's going to have to regenerate with it. That will be interesting to see. But I'm very confident that Dean Cox can coach. I'm less confident that he's going to be the senior coach of the Sydney Football Club ongoing beyond his initial three-year contract. That will be a watch for me. He just looks a bit hangdog. He looks like he's frustrated with his players. He's showing that in the media, and that gets back to the players, and the rift can start very, very quickly. He's not protective of his players so early in his coaching tenure like I would have expected. That's a watch for me.
Yeah, that's insightful.
What do you think? He's your coach.
Yeah, I think it's a farce. He can coach. He's very different to Horse in the way that he presents himself. Always in the box last year, basically you could see exactly how he felt and how he was responding to things that are happening on the ground. I wish him all the best. It'll be great to see the back end of this season when those senior players are back and how they perform at the end of the season. For me, that'll be a telltale sign.
Dean Cox has had a lot of injuries on his list, and I accept that he gets a little bit of credit points for that. But you made the point about John Longmire. Longmire was very demonstrative in the box. You knew what he was feeling. But I never recalled a press conference in all of his time coaching at Sydney where you felt like he was talking down the players. And I've already seen a little bit of that from Dean Cox, and I reckon that's a concern.
Number four, Adelaide can win the 2025 Premiership.
Yeah, they can, Wallace. probably the knock against Adelaide right now is that all of their wins have come against sides that you don't really expect to see in the top four or five alongside of them at the end of the year. But right now, and I was just listening to Daniel Hoyne, who spoke on SEN's Sports Day, the Victorian version last night, and he talked about how the best teams in the AFL right now, and historically over the last 20 years, the teams who've won the premiership are the teams who are the best ball movers in the competition. And right now, the Adelaide Football Club is the number one ball movement team in the competition. So that is movement from any stoppage except a centre bounce or a forward 50 stoppage or any turnover. Adelaide moves the ball better than anyone else in the competition in that scenario, and that is a proven record for going on to win a premiership. So I like Adelaide. They've got some challenges. They've got a good draw. You know, they'll play Port Adelaide a second time that you think, you know, you would have said at the start of the year, that's a terrible draw playing Port Adelaide twice. Right now, that looks like a pretty good draw. And if they can finish top four and they get two chances, yeah, they're a chance. They're in it as much as any of those other sides that you'd be talking about. Geelong, Western Bulldogs, Brisbane, Gold Coast, Collingwood, all of those clubs, Hawthorn, they're the ones. And I think any one of them can win it right now. And Adelaide, definitely in amongst it.
Now, the last one, the end of LIV Golf is nigh.
Wallace, I think this is fair. I actually think that we may only see one more year of LIV Golf in South Australia. That's probably very surprising to people who are, I guess, casual followers of golf who listen to us, because it has been so incredibly popular here in Adelaide. And I've even read an article in the Advertiser in the last 24 hours where Brett Lewis, the CEO of the Cuyonga Golf Club, has been talking up the fact that LIV has been instrumental in driving, in particular, the growth of game amongst girls and young women, which is an incredible story, isn't it? But all of that and the success of LIV here in Adelaide is against the backdrop that it has really, really struggled with TV numbers back into the US and fans turning up outside of what we've seen in Adelaide. The crowds have been mixed outside of South Australia and the TV numbers are terrible. What's coming up for LIV, and this is where the great challenge is, Dustin Johnson is out of contract this year. Now, he's not the biggest player on LIV anymore by any stretch, but coming out of contract next year is Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau. And I feel like if the league lost players of that caliber, the interest in the league globally just plummets. And right now, there's an ongoing battle between the PGA Tour and LIV. And I feel like the PGA Tour is so far advanced in winning that overall battle. LIV doesn't look like it's going to get rankings points soon. That is something that the players absolutely crave. It's keeping them out of majors. It's frustrating their professional goals. Financial goals are being met by LIV, but the professional goals are not. And I just reckon it's going to come to a head soon enough, because LIV as a product just hasn't had the global cut through any of them were expecting.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's fair, 100%. We talked about this a while back, and the fact that these contracts, you know, were potentially coming up and for renewal, and if they don't sign them, and it's been presented in the media that they've been told that their contracts will not be as big as they were from the beginning.
Well, they're being told that there will be no big sign-up fee like the sign-up fee that they got initially. LIV, I mean, I think it spent $5 billion and has no real traction in the game. They could have gone to the PGA Tour and offered $5 million and maybe had a 40% stake in the sport. So it's been an unusual way to go and try and leverage yourself into a sport, and just how much longer that can hold on for, I think. We're seeing the end of the tunnel with this, and I don't think it's going to end well for LIV unless they're prepared to continue to throw good money after bad. And no one could say anything other than it's been largely a bad investment right now. Hey, I've got one for you, and I just want to put this to you. And we just spend most of the time with me just throwing away hot takes or just coming up with, you know, opinions that probably are not based in either merit or intelligence. But Wallace, not many people have an understanding of you and your background in sport. You've been very heavily involved in driving leadership in sport. You've got a massive background in it. But I want to come up with a concept each week that I'm going to put some sort of issue that's going on probably in South Australian sport to you. And I want you to put yourself in the shoes of the general manager. You're the GM is what I'm going to call it. Wallace, the GM. And I guess the easy way to start is to ask you, what would you do right now if you were Matthew Richardson, the general manager of the Port Adelaide Football Club? Well, Richo's the CEO, if you like, but what would you do right now if you were the Port Adelaide Football Club boss and you had a succession plan in place and a whole host of people raging, saying you should make the change right now?
Happy to get involved with this, Hookie. You've started with a big one, which is great, so thank you.
go for it, my man. I'm all ears.
Yeah, I think from any organisational point of view, they've obviously made a considered decision. And quite honestly, you've just got to stick with it. Anything else they do would undermine their decision-making process and the confidence in the organisation. There would have been conversations whether, you know, whether it was not to pay out a year of Ken's contract or a plan to keep Carr at the club. We don't know. We weren't there. But they've made a call, and I think they've got no choice but to stick with it. We know that Carr's signed on for 3 years from 26 to 28, and it appears that he's having a little bit more investment in regards to recruiting and list management. But all the day-to-day stuff is still under Hinckley's guide. So with that in mind, what would I do? Obviously, I'd be talking about the future. I'd be talking to the organisation's partners. I'd be out there selling the long-term vision of the club. Also, what we've achieved. I mean, I think, you know, they've done pretty well considering when Hinckley joined 13 years ago. I think the club wasn't in a great position. I don't think they had a high number of memberships. You know, I was at the Port Adelaide game and I still love the way that Port have created the beginning of that match. It is just inspirational, and I can get why people actually love it. So I'd be playing to those strengths. I'd be talking about the longer-term vision of the club, what they've achieved, and what 2026 looks like under the new coach. I'd be talking about the future and also reinforcing the stars that they have at the Power.
Beautiful, mate. And I think your point's well made, is that if Ken Hinckley got moved on at the start of this year, then that has a huge effect on the soft cap. Because Ken Hinckley's contract is still a part of the soft cap. And if Josh Carr comes in and takes over from Ken Hinckley, who gets moved on, well, that money's lost. It's not like you can bring in a range of assistant coaches to support Josh. It would be Josh doing it virtually on his own in a way. You know, he's got a couple of assistant coaches around him, but that would be a significant loss. And that's just really unfair on a guy in his first year as coach. So I think people do... yeah, they rage against it and they see something and they think, well, we've got to change it now. But there's a whole host of factors. And your point's well made that there is still a long-term vision to sell about this, because Carr is the coach for the next 3 years from 2026 onwards. And you can't afford to forget about all of that and all of the baggage that goes with the challenges of the soft cap and a very, very undermanned, under-resourced football department if you move Ken out of it early.
Yeah, I was a few years back, I was involved in some strategic planning in Matthew Richardson, not for the Port Adelaide Club, for another organisation. And Matthew Richardson presented to the group. They're a very considered organisation.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I'd encourage you to take a listen to Beyond the Club. It's a project I've been working on with Flinders University. Now I co-host it with Professor Sam Elliott, and we break down all the latest research on how to maximise the experience of junior and club athletes. There's a range of resources, special guests, and cutting-edge info on how you can make your club a safer, happier place for your kids and their club mates. Beyond the Club, wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, Wallace, let me just give you a bit of an around the grounds of what's going on in South Australian sport. This is the stuff that not every mainstream outlet would talk about, but I reckon it's what our grassroots listeners really appreciate when they tune into Hooked On Sport. Just want to give a high commendation to Alex Chidiac. Now, Alex Chidiac plays for the Melbourne Victory A-League women's team, but born and bred South Australian. She's just won her second Julie Dolan medal. So for those who aren't aware of what the Julie Dolan medal is, it's essentially the Brownlow for women's football. So as someone who, she was actually born in Sydney, but moved when she was 3 months and absolutely sees herself as a South Australian playing with the arch rivals, the Melbourne Victory now, but congratulations to her. And then Archie Goodwin, now playing for Adelaide United, also originally from New South Wales, but we're claiming him, Wallace. You've only got to land in here for a couple of days, and I'm claiming it. 20 years of age, played 26 games for Adelaide United. 19 of them were starts. He scored 13 goals for the year. It made him the Young Footballer of the Year for the A-League men's competition. So that is a massive achievement for one of our young up-and-comers. Talking about Goodwins, great to see that Craig Goodwin is going to be returning to the club for the upcoming season as well. And then finally, just on football news, Adrian Stenter was crowned A-League Women's Coach of the Year following a record-breaking season for the Reds women. So, great to see Adelaide United, who they do a really good job of running two professional teams on the smell of an oily rag. I've had my issues with basketball in the past. Adelaide United, very different category. They are doing it for the right reasons. They're promoting both men's and women's competitions as well as they possibly can. And I'm so pleased to see that both Archie Goodwin and Adrian Stenter have been honoured for their performances for both sides of the club in the last 48 hours. And congratulations once again to Alex Chidiak as well. Just a couple of other things going around. Just want to congratulate Jen Adams and Courtney Hobbs. Now, they're probably two names that not everyone will be familiar with. They are star South Australian and Australian lacrosse players. They played together for the Maryland Terrapins back in 2000 and won the US College National Championship. And they've actually been over there in the last, this last few days, celebrating the 25-year reunion. So very pleased to see the two of them, who I know quite well, certainly Courtney Hobbs very well, but Jen Adams, one of the all-time greats of Australian lacrosse, celebrating that. And talking about reunions, on Friday night, Wallace, it'll be the 2015 West Adelaide Premiership reunion. Now, that is an amazing story. Coached by Mark Micken, they finished ninth the year before. It looked like it was going to be a procession of the Woodville West Torrens Eagles going on to win the title. But, somehow they found a way. Despite losing eight games for the year, West Adelaide went on and won that 2015 Premiership. So I'll be there catching up with a number of those players. Chris Schmidt was the captain. Mark Micken was coach, as I said. Jason Paul-Pleasure, that was his first year out of the Adelaide Football Club, and he played an instrumental role as well, as did Adam Hartlett, who's their current coach. So that's going to be a really fun night. And then there's just one thing that caught my eye, Wallace, that I reckon you might appreciate, and I always love an unusual stat. I was having a look at the Adelaide Footy League Women's Division 1 Premiership table, and the team that's in second position is Happy Valley. They're 5 wins from 6 games, but their percentage is 48.79. So they've got a percentage below 50%, despite the fact that they've won 5 of 6 games. And I thought, well, there must be a story to that. And there is. Have a look at this. They are the absolute thriller masters, the Happy Valley women. In round one, they beat Henley by 3 points. In round two, they beat Morphettville Park by 3 points. In round three, they beat Goodwood Saints by 4 points. In round four, this is where their percentage is in negatives, because they lost to Paynham Norwood Union by 70 points.
Right.
Then they bounced back in round five and beat Broadview by 2 points. So the percentage would have been at that point about 40. And then last weekend, they beat Golden Grove by 48 points. So imagine that, 5 wins from 6 games and your percentage is still in negative territory. That's pretty amazing. So anyway, just a couple of cool little news stories going around in South Australian sport right now.
What's this about your SA Sport Club power rankings?
Yes, good question. And it's because I'm a bit of a nerd with no life that I decided to try and compare all of the national and state league teams that are currently or have competed over the course of 2025 in South Australia and see if I can work out who the best team is right now. Who's the team that you would say has the best performed in 2025. And I'm looking a little bit to the future. I'm looking a little bit to the past, but I've come up with my top 10, Wallace. So I'm just going to share them with you right now. The team at number one is obvious because they did the double. They won the One Day Cup and the Sheffield Shield. It's the South Australian men's cricket team. It's going to be very, very difficult to knock them off. At number two is the SA women's softball team, who won the Gillies Shield in January this year. At number three, the SANFL and Sturt, who are unbeaten at the moment, 7 wins, 0 losses. For number four, I've moved to the Premier League of South Australian hockey. And the women for Adelaide Hockey Club are 7 and zip. So they're sitting at number four. At number five, and I've got a little asterisk here, the Brighton Lacrosse men are 5-0 and are performing very, very well. I've left out the Brighton Lacrosse women, and I'll tell you why I've left out the Brighton Lacrosse women, who are 4-0, undefeated so far this year. But I've gone through their last 7 years where they've won seven flags. They've won 95 of their last 105 games and 14 of their last 15 finals. So when you've been that good for that long, I've decided you can just take a seat out of my power rankings for a little while. At number six, I've got the Adelaide Crows, 7-4 and 4th. At number seven, I've got the Adelaide Thunderbirds, who are also 7-4 and 3rd. You get a little bit of credit if you're playing in a National League competition. I think people would understand that. At number eight, I've got the West Adelaide Women in the Women's National Premier League. So that's the soccer competition, the State League soccer competition, the NPL. They are 8 points clear on with 8 wins and a draw from 9 matches. At number nine, now this is contentious, but I've got Oakdale as our top South Australian Premier League netball club right now. I've put them ahead of Contacts, even though Contacts is ahead of them on the premiership table. But it's only on percentage, and Oakdale have a far better draw over the next 2 weeks. So I'm going to put Oakdale ahead of Contacts in nine. And then at number 10, I've got Metro Stars, the men's National Premier League competition out of South Australia. They're 2 wins on top of that competition and travelling very, very well. Wallace, so that's my top 10 in the power rankings. I gave an honourable mention to Brighton Lacrosse, the women who have had that incredible record. I just want to recognise the Woodville Warriors women's basketball team as well. There are people who are going to say, oh, there was no NBL one team in Hookie's power rankings. Yeah, fair enough, there wasn't. There's no real standout team in either competition yet, but I do want to mention the Woodville Warriors, who have won their last 6 straight. They beat South Adelaide on the weekend, first time they've beaten the Panthers since 2019. So they're on an absolute hot streak. Guess who their big recruit was this year? None other than basketball and football legend Aaron Phillips. So the Warriors in green and gold, a team that has struggled a little bit in the last few years, up and amongst the big wigs, the heavyweights, on the back of the all-time great Aaron Phillips. So Woodville Warriors on watch to potentially make the power rankings in the not-too-distant future if they can keep up this run. 6 on the trot after losing their first 3, Wallace. So what a story that is.
Brilliant, Hookie. That's a wrap on another episode of Hooked on Sport. A quick reminder to follow us and leave a review if you enjoy what you hear. Your support helps Hooked on Sport reach even more sports-minded people just like you. We look forward to your company next week on Hooked on Sport.